The F1 Show has arrived on the banks of the St. Lawrence River, at the Paris of North America, the lovely city of Montreal, for the Grand Prix de Canada. This unique venue, a semi-permanent street circuit, set in a park on the Île Notre-Dame between a biosphere and a retro-futuristic casino, is named after their legendary hometown hero. The Circuit Gilles Villeneuve, with its hairpin turn and the ever-so-close wall of champions, has been the scene of exciting and dramatic Grand Prix of past. For this seventh round of the series calendar, everything is still undecided for a season leader, although there are familiar faces at the front. Who will kiss the wall of champions, and who will be kissing the trophy at the top step of the podium? Stay tuned. This is Desiree, and this is your F1 Weekly Racecast. What of our listeners?
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Falb, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 582, June 14th, 2012. Steven?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by the donation button located on the front page of the website. Click on it, get your name mentioned on the podcast. You know you want to.
Thank you, Steven. On today's program, Pirelli looking at harder compounds. Is Kimi getting sleepy? And who could possibly be our next winner? Motorsports Mondial with the King of Karachi and special interview with Petri Suvanto. And this weekend's podcast number 583, and that means a weekend interview special with former McLaren mechanic Mark Presley. Stephen, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm wonderful, Mr. Rogers. And yourself?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Great Canadian Grand Prix. We had a Frenchman on the podium.
Beautiful weather.
Great weather. A little warm.
Yeah.
Actually.
It'd be like perfect watching. Perfect for the spectators. I don't know about the tires.
Yeah.
And the cars, but.
But very exciting. And, of course, tires is the focus now for everyone.
Well, it's working.
It is. It is, but very fascinating. Canadian Grand Prix, I did enjoy it. I do like that track. In final practice, FP3, Jean-Éric Vergne crashed into the tire barrier. I thought it was fascinating. I expected Pastor Maldonado to crash in the tire barrier, but he didn't. But certainly a sunny day, and of course we had the yellow-colored soft tire and the red
super soft.
So, anyway, let's go right to Q1, Canada. Oh, and Kimi got fined at the yin-yang by the stewards for diving into the pits at the very, very, very last second. Not sure, you know,
Did he start the turn and then turn into the pits?
Somewhat. But they deemed it unsafe and fined him a lot.
Yeah, because the pits in Canada are pretty much, you're straight off the end of the straight.
That's what I didn't understand either. You go straight into the pits, or you go into the chicane.
Right.
Not sure, dude.
Did somebody like go to turn to the first chicane and then cuts it back?
Not sure, but well, let's go ahead and go to Q1. Sebastian Vettel took a long time to come out. That was really the only startling thing. Sebastian Vettel finally goes to P1 with a 114.7. And I was just surprised how many teams were on the super softs already.
Yeah, well, I think that's almost kind of, I don't know, it's kind of gotten to that point. I don't know why in the first round, because even, well, I suppose for the bottom level tier teams, maybe.
Yeah, if you're fighting Marussia.
Yeah, but it could be the fact that the disparity in the tires is such that on the hard mediums, you're significantly enough slower. Because they were saying that the whole field was really tight this weekend.
And it's, yeah.
And that's part of it in the, you know, you basically to make sure that you get out, you don't, for some reason, you know, if you have a bad lap on the mediums and you're kind of SOL, if, you know, Caterham has a good lap, you know.
Yeah, no, I found it interesting. But anyway, nothing scary happened. Heikki Kovalainen, Petrov, Vanja, Rosa, Glock, Peak, and Nahrain Karthikeyan, Stephen, were out. Q2, a lot of teams depending, again, on the super softs, which surprised me. At the end of Q2, Pastor Maldonado, which should have had the spin in practice 3,
but
had it in Q2 right at the end of his last flying lap, and he was flying, which explained the spin. Yeah,
exactly.
He was going above and beyond the capabilities of his abilities. Yes. And
was it in this round, or was it the next that Fernando had his nice little pirouette across the grass?
That was the next one, but still, he did hit the wall, and he'll have to have a gearbox change.
Prepared.
So not only does he hit the wall, but he gets another 5 places on the grid, which makes Pedro de la Rosa really, really happy. So Pastor Maldonado is out in the second qualifying. Senna, Sergio Perez, shocking. Danny Ricciardo, Nico Hülkenberg, Kimi Räikkönen.
Yeah, that was
those two guys, Hülkenberg and Räikkönen.
Yeah, well, Räikkönen was a real surprise because of how well it appeared the Lotus was running, because they were one of the top, they were like top 5 in the speed trap.
And we have the same conversation at every race. We predict the Lotus is going to do well. They're due for a win. And we keep seeing this stumbling.
Yeah.
And most of the time from Kimi Räikkönen.
Yeah. If you go back and look, what? He's only qualified his teammate once, I think, so far this season.
I agree. He needs to pick it up.
Yeah.
He's had some issues with the power steering, a la Trulli. This weekend, he had some problems with the differential.
Well, at least he didn't have as much trouble as poor Jenson Button, who didn't have a car for almost two-thirds of second practice on Friday.
Correct. He had some gearbox issues. So, but still, Kimi Räikkönen, when your teammate is doing so well, and you expect a world champion to be at least competitive.
Right. And the team is giving you a competitive car.
Right. Hülkenberg, you know, he still has a learning curve. Paul De Rissa doing an outstanding job.
And Force India has been so kind of up and down as far as being competitive.
And I was surprised to see both Saubers out in Q2 because they show good race pace in the race.
Yeah, that's an interesting one because they've been very strong, and they've been strong in quali too. Maybe this weekend they're just not, for some reason, not suited to this track.
I agree. Let's go to Q3. Of course, you know, a lot of people wait for several minutes before they come out.
Yeah, like 7.
Exactly. Yeah. You got to save the tires.
Especially now that they're having to use the reds earlier.
Exactly.
It's kind of creating this. I did like, was it last week that, was it probably that came out that was in, they were starting to talk about quali only tires?
Yeah, well, they're willing to do it, but the teams don't want to. I mean, that's what Pirelli says, but I haven't spoken to the teams, and we really haven't heard people from the teams mention that they don't want quali tires. I'm sure the sponsors would like quali tires, but I don't know. This time, there was more running than in previous Q3s.
Yeah, I would like to see, you know, if that's what it takes to get the cars on the track, that's what I'd like to see.
I agree. But
frankly, I'm not sure that having a special set of quality trials is really going to change quality strategy that much.
No. 4 minutes left in Q3. It was Sebastian Vettel, Fernando Alonso, Lewis Hamilton, Massa, Weber, Grosjean, Rosberg, Schumacher, and Jenson Button. Jenson Button not having a lot of fun.
No, he's not having. He was really penalized by not being able to run a lot in second practice on Saturday, just because he didn't have a chance to really get his car dialed in. Whereas you can see from Lewis's times that Lewis had all that time and was able to dial his car in for his driving style, Jensen's basically driving the car with Lewis's setup, which is not really suited to his style.
Right. And I said Danny Ricciardo. I was wrong. He was out in Q2. I meant Paul DiResta.
Okay.
But in the end, Sebastian Vettel bangs out a great pole position.
A sweet lap.
0.3 faster than Lewis Hamilton. Then Fernando Alonso and Mark Webber on the second row. Nico Rosberg and Felipe Massa on the third. Fourth row, starting Grosjean. Great job by Paul DiResta, Schumacher, and Jenson Button, P10, and then at the end of the race, whined about how he shouldn't even have run in Q3 to save tires. But I think he had bigger problems than that.
No, he had bigger problems than that. It wouldn't have made. I don't think the tires would have made any difference because his car was eaten up anyway.
Exactly. Anyway, Canadian Grand Prix, race day, Sunday, hot weather. 80 degrees. The track is 109 degrees. We're doing 70 laps, ladies and gentlemen. Like I said, Pastor Maldonado had a gear change. He's now starting in P22. Pedro de la Rosa ahead of both Marussias, which is good. The lights go out, and a really clean starting lap for everybody.
That was unusually, especially in Canada.
Yeah.
Because Canada's really got that chicane literally 100 yards from the start line. And for everybody to get away, Vettel got a fantastically clean getaway. Lewis isn't anywhere near him when he gets to the first corner. It gets a little dicey, a little tight with Rosberg. And was it Webber?
DiResta.
And Webber was fighting.
And Felipe Massa.
We're fighting, yeah. And so, a good start, but clean. Everybody's, you know, staying to their lines and not doing dumb stuff.
Right. Mark Webber had a pretty decent start. Lap 2, Felipe Massa passes Nico Rosberg. Lap 3, DRS is enabled. Lap 4, Nico Rosberg is now very close to DiResta. Lap 5, Sebastian Vettel, Lewis Hamilton, Fernando Alonso, Mark Webber, Nico Rosberg, and Pedro. I'm going to have to call.
You've really stuck on Pedro, aren't you?
Yeah. No. And Paul DiResta. So, excuse me, Nico Rosberg got by Paul DiResta.
You're going to have to make your own abbreviation for it.
I know.
You have to do.
It's just one of those things. Fast lap of the race, Lewis Hamilton with a 119.6 on the fifth lap. Lap 6, Felipe Massa spins in turn 1.
With no one near him.
You know what?
And probably falls.
He had a really 60. Good start, and you could tell he did have some mojo going, but he makes that mistake and drops down to P12, which was a big drag. The team tell Nico Rosberg to save tires.
It also put him in a situation, too, where he was concerned about his tires within 2 laps, where he was trying to get Smedley to let him come in and change them.
That's the biggest problem. You start the race, the adrenaline is pumping, and then about lap 6 or 7, all of a sudden, oh yeah, I've got 70 laps. I've got to make these tires last. You know,
at least I'm on a one stopper.
Yeah, exactly. Even though some people were on a 2-stopper, and I think the 2-stop was really the way to go. But it depends on which team you were on,
right? And also, again, especially with a 2-stopper, you've got to be able to hold your tires, and you really need to make that first stint. Especially if you're on the softs in the first stint, you've got to make them last an extra 2, 3, 4 laps so that you're mediums aren't complete toast when you get to the final lap.
It's definitely the tortoise and the hare story here. If you're on a one-stopper, you can't start banging out fast laps and burn up your tires. You got to take it easy and get the big picture. But if you're on a 2-stopper and you can bang out those laps, come in for a second pit stop, it's a good strategy.
Yeah.
So there you have it. The team tells Nico Rosberg to save tires on lap 6. Lap 8, Paul DiResta passes Nico Rosberg. I knew he was going to do it eventually, Stephen.
Yeah. I don't know what it
was. Nico Mercedes, was having a problem.
Yeah, the Mercedes did not seem 100%.
And that was another car everybody expected to do well in Canada.
Yeah. And before the end of the race, one of them's done and the other one doesn't finish very well.
Exactly. And not only that, but on lap 9, the team tells Nico Rosberg he's got to save fuel on top of everything else. Save tires, save fuel, save money for your lunch.
Exactly.
So it's fascinating. Lap 11, Sebastian Vettel, Lewis Hamilton. It's a 1.5 seconds. On lap 13, Felipe Massa pits, goes with the softs, comes out in P20. He's suffered a lot for that spin.
Yep.
Lewis Hamilton is now catching the leader. Paul DiResta pits on lap 15, 3.7 stops. Schumacher pits as well, 3.9. And tire degradation is worse for a number of teams than they anticipated.
Yeah, the tires are going off a lot more quickly. Red Bull's one of them. Sebastian Vettel's tires aren't holding up nearly as well as you thought. And part of that, too, I think, is because he was trying to do his patented get away from the field at the start of the race to open up a one-second gap so he can't be DRS'd. And that actually, I think, ends up costing him two or three laps on his tires.
I agree. Lap 15, fast lap of the race, Romain Grosjean with a 119.6. Kimi Raikkonen gets by Jenson Button. Lap 16, fast lap of the race, 119.5 by Nico Rosberg. Rosberg is now getting more comfortable with the car and getting those laps that he needs to get. Nico Hülkenberg is fighting with the Saubers of Kamui Kobayashi. Lap 16, like you said, Sebastian Vettel pits, goes with the softs, comes out in P6. Lewis Hamilton pits on P17.
Yeah, on the next lap.
Correct.
After banging in a really good lap.
And that's what was impressive. And this was good strategy. I thought this was, for me, this was the better strategy. Bang in really big laps, burn up your tires, come in early for a new set of tires, and continue banging out good laps. And like you said, Lewis Hamilton comes out on lap 18 in front.
Yep, just squeaks out ahead of...
And while this is going on, Fernando Alonso is now flying
he's putting on his fantastic laps.
Yeah, and on lap 20, he pits, Nico Rosberg pits. Fast lap of the race is Lewis Hamilton with a 118.994 because he knows Fernando is going to pit. And Fernando Alonso on lap 20 comes out in front of both Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah.
I was happy. That was an exciting moment.
It was a very good...
But the problem is, these moments are really great if DRS doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But with DRS, and as Fernando Alonso came out right in front of Lewis Hamilton... I was going, well, this isn't going
to
last.
Yeah, because the Ferrari doesn't have the kind of top end to hold him off.
And you know that one-second gap is going to be there. DRS is going to happen.
Yeah.
Especially on a track that is the quickest lap of the season.
Well, not only that, but the DRS zone on this is if there was a straight in Formula One built for DRS, it's Canada, because... Both cars are coming out of the hairpin. They've got no momentum coming off of that turn. And it's basically a drag race. And when it's a drag race, I was watching it. They were showing it so many times where both cars had complete charges on their...
On
their curve systems. And you watch them use it up because the guy's trying to get as much as he can to hit a guy. And the window opens. And if he's within a second, he's more off... I think I only saw like three cars that could actually hold someone off.
So for me, I think the DRS takes away a little bit because really, if it was a no DRS season, then we would have to see that excitement on that straight from sheer raw performance of the car,
right,
team to team.
Well, you would have to see people giving up downforce to get that better top end.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think DRS... takes away from the show a little bit, but that, you know, I might not say that if it wasn't Fernando Alonso. Exactly. I mean, I am biased, and I admit it. So there you have a lap 22, fast lap of the race, Lewis Hamilton with a 118.9. Fast lap of the race on 23, Lewis Hamilton with a 118.7. Timo Glock pits on lap 25, and the team tells Michael Schumacher he needs to take Paul De Rissa for the race. But they forgot to tell him that Sergio Perez is there too, because he had just come out of the pits and split. And now Michael Schumacher, unfortunately, had to take both of them. Lap 28, once again, Lewis Hamilton, fast lap of the race with a 118.5. And at this stage, Pedro De La Rosa is out. He pits and he's got serious brake issue. Carbon clouds everywhere.
Yeah, that was an interesting one, watching them push that car. It's like, I hope those guys have got masks, because it was like this black fog following the car into the
pistol. Was pretty brutal, and this track is hard on brakes.
Very hard. And because it's all slow, medium to slow corners after long straights.
Right. And let's face it, HRT has like 80 employees.
Right.
So they might have forgotten about the brakes completely.
Or basically went, oh, yeah, brakes.
Well, they knew it was going to be warm. They were focused on the gazpacho. So there you have it.
You're
on.
Worried about tires.
Exactly. Lap 28, the team tells Lewis Hamilton, we have hit target. Everything is beautiful. Just keep pushing hard. And I like that. They were confident today. They did an outstanding job. Lap 33, fast lap of the race. Lewis Hamilton with a 118.0. And Lewis Hamilton asked the team if we were on target.
The other thing he was asking, too, is where can I improve?
What sector is my weakness? And I think Lewis Hamilton is maturing and becoming a really, really fantastic driver.
Yeah, and I think he uses it as a challenge to himself.
Absolutely.
Basically, to dial in.
Well, he knows that Fernando Alonso is lurking, Sebastian Vettel is lurking. So, no, smart move on Hamilton. Lap 36, the team tells Mark Webber to hang in there, Boudreaux, because he's got a bunch of traffic. He goes, I'm getting tired, I want to go home. When things don't work out, things don't work out.
Yeah, he goes from winning the race to whining.
Correct. Lap 40, Romain Grosjean is now closing on Mark Webber. Kimi Raikkonen pits, goes with the Super Softs, and comes out in P8, leapfrogs both Michael Schumacher and Nico Rosberg, which I thought was great. Big lockup from Michael Schumacher as he's passing Kamui Kobayashi. Then it's repassed by Kamui Kobayashi. Perez pits on 41 and comes out ahead of Kimi Raikkonen. And then Nico Rosberg gets by as well by pulling the sneaky, which I thought was fantastic. Now, on lap 45, I was stunned to see Michael Schumacher pit again. And sure enough, his DRS was stuck open.
Yeah, that was weird.
That was strange. And people were banging on it.
The mechanics turned on. Nothing's happening.
Excuse me. Which is strange because really, you would think something like that would have enough play in it where it wouldn't get stuck.
Yeah.
And if it did, you could just slap it like a...
And you'd think that it would... I would expect it would be run by like a compressed airline and not a linkage that could jam like that.
I think it's a combination of both.
Probably. It's hard to say. It would be interesting to find out what actually happened to it to cause it to jam open.
But once again, out of the race, no points. Schumacher's really had some bad karma.
Yeah, some bad luck this season.
Absolutely.
He seems to be the guy who gets the bad car. Whereas back in the days of Ferrari, he never got the bad car.
Yes, that's very, very true. Interesting. But I'm sure that Norbert Hogg will be very apologetic. Lap 48, Lewis Hamilton tells his team that the rear tires are going off. And by the way, Jean-Éric Vergne has a drive-through penalty for speeding in the pit lane. Lap 49, fast lap of the race. Nico Rosberg with a 117.3. Jenson Button is about to be lapped by Lewis Hamilton on the following lap, which was stunning. Luckily, Lewis Hamilton pits. No, excuse me. Yes, Lewis Hamilton pits and avoids the lapping of his teammate. 5-second stop. Good stop. They've improved their stops, but there was a little lag. His anti-stall kicked in.
Yeah, like he didn't.
So he had to pull the clutch in one more time. And then he went.
Right. A bobble coming out of the box.
So, but still, it wasn't enough. Came out P3 ahead of Mark Webber. Fernando Alonso now is flying on lap 51. Pretty exciting stuff. Lap 53, fast lap of the race. Lewis Hamilton with a 117. Jenson Button pits again. Pit number 3. He's having all sorts of issues.
Yeah.
He's way in the back. He's like a 2 seconds slower than the leaders.
Yeah, that car, like I said, they never got it dialed in, and it actually seemed to just get worse.
Yes, no, it was absolutely bizarre. 56, Nico Rosberg cuts the chicane, has to let Felipe Massa back by, and while he's doing that, because he's trying to be politically correct, Sergio Perez goes the sneaky and gets in as well. Then Sergio Perez passes Felipe Massa, and I like Sergio Perez. He likes passing Ferraris ever since Montezemolo said that he didn't have enough experience to be a Ferrari. So now his goal is simply to pass Ferrari. Felipe Massa pits, goes with the softs. Lap 60, fast lap of the race, Sergio Perez with a 116.8. Fernando Alonso has the lead. And by the way, Fernando Alonso has now led 1,500 laps in Formula One.
Wow.
Exactly, Stephen. The team tells Lewis Hamilton, you've got plenty of time to pass all these people. You're on fresh tires. It doesn't look like Vettel or Fernando are going to stop for another pit stop.
And he's got 100 races with McLaren.
100?
100 races.
Lewis Hamilton.
Yes.
Yes, okay. I was going to say Fernando, no.
No, but they were saying that that's the longest
oh.
to start a career, and it's by a long chalk. No
Correct.
One's ever even been close to that minute.
Well, you know, we'll see how long Lewis Hamilton stays at McLaren.
No, that's a lot of talk. The big talk, yeah.
A lot of chit-chat. Lap 63, Sebastian decides to pit with seven laps to go because his tires are so shot. Lewis Hamilton... Fernando Alonso has no chance. He's not pitted. There's seven laps to go.
And Lewis passes him in the hairpin. He doesn't even wait for the straight.
Yeah. And, God, I felt so sorry for Fernando, but once again, the cliff was here.
Yeah. Well, I think I've got a new term for it. It's called China Syndrome because
Correct.
The way you just drop through the field, it's like a molten nuclear core going down to, through the earth.
Absolutely. Lap 65, fast lap of the race, Felipe Massa with a 116.8 because he got new tires. Lap 65, Romain Grosjean passes Fernando Alonso for P2.
Yeah, that was...
That was exciting. Sergio Perez is still flying, putting in a 116.7. On 66, Romain Grosjean is thinking, you know, can I catch Lewis Hamilton?
He's wondering.
He was wondering. He is a pretty happy French guy for sure. 67, Sebastian Vettel kisses the wall just a bit.
Jeez,
the wall of champions, your favorite wall, Stephen.
While he sets fast lap.
Yep. Lap 68, Sergio Perez says, you know what? Everybody else is passing Fernando, and I love passing Ferraris. Here I go. And he went right by him, thinking yep. about Malaysia, how he can never get by Fernando and win that Grand Prix. There you have it. A fantastic race for... Lewis Hamilton, he is the Grand Prix winner. Third Canadian Grand Prix winning for him. First time in 5 years.
Seventh winner?
Correct. The seventh winner of the season in 2012. Great podium for Romain Grosjean. Second podium for Lotus F1 this season. And, of course, Sergio Perez. Another outstanding job. Montezemolo. Bite your tongue.
Exactly. Don't give this kid any motivation. He doesn't need it.
And he, as usual, Sebastian Vettel pounds in the last fastest lap of the race with a 115.7 since he had some nice fresh tires. But yep. there you have it. An outstanding race. And it finished like that with Vettel coming in fourth, fifth with Alonso, Rosberg in sixth, which I thought was pretty good considering some of the struggles he had at the beginning of the race.
Exactly.
Mark Webber was 7th, Kimi Raikkonen 8th, Kamui Kobayashi 9th, and Felipe Massa brings
points.
In a point.
Yay.
So I was happy with that. Sebastian Vettel did the best he could, and I think it would have been worse if he didn't stop for tires 7 laps before the end.
I think it made sense. And for him, frankly, finishing ahead of Fernando was probably the most important point.
Absolutely, absolutely. But a fantastic race. There was some moaning and groaning from Jenson Button, but still, Lewis Hamilton drove a wonderful race. And once again, the tires are playing a big part of this. I mean, there was an editorial from Minardi, and he's calling it the Pirelli World Championship.
Still got to put a car on top of them tires.
Exactly, exactly. That's my attitude. And there's talk about possibly coming up with some different compounds for Silverstone. But anyway, let's go ahead and hear from the drivers.
Raikkonen's mark. It is also 44 years and one day since the first ever McLaren race win for Bruce McLaren back in 1968 in Belgium. But more importantly, Lewis Hamilton becomes the seventh different winner of 2012. Romain Grosjean finishes in second place, just 2.5 seconds behind. Perez is third. We're going to see Vettel coming home in fourth place and setting the fastest lap on the final lap of the race. Sebastian Vettel, Alonso fifth, from Rosberg. He only just held on to fifth place in the Ferrari.
Feeling incredible, absolutely incredible. So happy to be wearing this top and be the one that's, you know, to have deserved it. But really so happy for the team. We're the only team that celebrates like this, you know, and so it's a very, very special feeling. And to have my third win here, I couldn't be happier.
Tell us the key to unlocking this circuit, because you've really got it nailed over the past few years.
Yeah, I guess it suits my aggressive driving style that people give me. You know how it is. You have to bump in over the curves, and that is phenomenal to drive. And I really didn't know that we were going to be able to be so competitive with the long, you know, looking after the tires. But I knew it was a two-stop for us, and we just focused on that. We didn't deter from that at all, and you know, it worked for us.
At any point did you start to doubt when you saw that the Ferrari was staying out, the Red Bull was staying out, or did you just say, right, game on, this is my opportunity?
You know, it's one of the very few races that you kind of, I had a lot of information from the guys, so I knew about every sector, all the pace that the guys behind me were doing. After I did the first stop and I got past Fernando and I was pulling away, I thought, he's always just sandbagging at the beginning and he'll pick up his pace, but if he doesn't, then he's doing a one stop, and he didn't. So and I knew from there it's going to be tough to catch them up after our second stop, but we did it with no problems.
And we can see some of the bits of your race, actually. We'd like to hear your views, and we can all chat over the top of it, because this is at the beginning of the race. And what was going through your mind at this stage?
Well I was looking out to the left to see if Fernando was going to be coming out there. I lost a little bit of time in my stop with the launch. Perhaps I would have been just ahead of him if I hadn't had that. But then I knew that he would struggle on his out lap, and I was so close, so I just bided my time. And awesome. So much fun out there.
Just making that move, just reeling him in, it's like you're fishing. And especially by the end of the race, it was like you were fishing.
Yeah, it was, absolutely. At the end was great because the tyres were lasting so well. I was able to push. With the pit stops, it was nothing to do with the guys. They did a great job in the first stop. The second stop was a little bit slower on the left rear. But when I let the clutch out, I had an anti-stall on both.
Did that happen in both stops?
Both stops, yeah. So that might be my fault. We'll find out later on.
It was a heart-stopping moment there just for a second.
It wasn't. I wanted to go. We're ready.
Yeah, you were power sliding it out towards the...
I was flat out. You know, normally you drive away quite gently, but I was flooring it out there, you know.
And here we see the pass on Vettel. That was fairly straightforward in the end. It was like he was resigned to the fact you were going to pass him.
Yeah, I think he knew that it was, you know, very professional. You know, he's a two-time world champion, so he knows the deal.
And passing your old teammate here?
Yeah, I wanted to do it in the hairpin, but I thought, nah, because he would just overtake me again down the straight, because they're so quick on the straights. So I had great traction out the last corner, and then he tried to squeeze me a little bit here, but, you know, I love racing with Fernando. He's like the best driver here.
Not the day you're expecting. Give us your thoughts.
I didn't really know what to expect, but I didn't expect that, no. Qualifying, yeah, it didn't go perfectly, but normally in the race, it's the area where I'm normally reasonably strong, so thought we could have a good race, but today I was probably 1.5-2 seconds off of the pace of the leaders. And I don't think I've ever been that before, especially in a car that's won the Grand Prix.
Why? Why do you think you were so slow?
Haven't got a clue. And, you know, it's not like I'm not pushing or confident in, when I jump into the car. Just that felt like the limit of the car.
Jensen, do you think when we go to Valencia with harder compound tyres, that might help you a little bit?
It's not tyres. It's definitely not a tyre issue. You know, I can't be the only person that can't drive the tyres. It's impossible, you know. Tyres are normally something that I can work with and try and get the best out of before most. So.
Well, Romain Grosjean joins us now. Romain, congratulations. How do you feel? This must almost be like a home race for you. A bit of French-speaking people out there and lots of big French flags.
Yeah, exactly. It's good to be here. I've been very welcome and people speak French, so we do feel like home. It's a crazy track, very bumpy, very interesting, and I like it. And yeah, the team did an amazing job yesterday. On Friday and yesterday, we were not really happy with the car and our performance. But today, we knew that we had an aggressive strategy, one stop. It wasn't an easy race. You really focus on whatever you do on the car, because you know that tires have a memory and that they could make you pay later on. But we did it well, and we achieved a fantastic result.
I love that quote. I'm going to use that somewhere. Tires have a memory. I've never heard anyone say that. But what I remember is all around Monaco, the advertisement before that Grand Prix was of you. You know, in France, they were promoting you. Arriving here in Montreal, it was the same. You know, the French-speaking countries are really pushing, rewarding them with a podium as well. So, you know, you're becoming more and more famous by the day. How's that on top of getting your best result in Formula One?
It's fantastic to have people that that believes in you, that help you to get better, to have the chance to come back to Formula One, and now to see the flags in the grandstand, to see the advertising and everything is fantastic. And I wish I can sing a Marseillaise quite soon to reward them.
Okay, speaking of Pirelli, they say they plan to test a new hard compound in practice at the British Grand Prix, which will be easier for teams to work with. But, well, I think it's just going to last longer and not going to have the degradation that we experienced so far this season. But Pirelli says that despite the plans to test it, Paul Humphrey says his company is seriously concerned about making any changes to the tires because it could change the competitive situation in Formula One.
Yeah, right now you really can't do anything. Well, maybe later in the season. But at this moment, changing the compounds up would just be a little bit too drastic. Frankly, I don't care.
It depends how little they do it.
Right. And frankly, right now, I like this. I like seeing different people winning every week. It's much more interesting, much more entertaining, because you can't go into the race going, oh, it's going to be one of these three guys.
Not only that, but I think the strategy is become much more critical.
And it's also made it much more team-oriented, because if you bobble in the pits, you're screwed.
Oh, absolutely. That would be the worst. But still, I mean, Canada, I was really impressed how Perez and Grosjean had very successful one pit stop races where the winner had a really successful two stop race.
Yeah.
Both strategies worked well, but they had to be managed really well. Yeah. The pit stop had to come at a really good time, and the driver was critical in making those tires last.
Proper execution of the strategy, ultimately.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So each driver manages the tires differently. The cars manage the tires differently. So there are so many variables in play now,
right,
that it does become a fantastic spectator sport.
Spectacle.
Yeah, it is exciting. Christian Horner says, I think that the tire window is so narrow on this that it's difficult. You can move the performance around. You can attack qualifying and maybe it might hurt you in the race, or you can go soft in qualifying like Lotus did and perhaps be stronger in the race. I think this is going to be a factor for probably another 13 races. It's been a tricky one. Fernando Alonso is probably sitting there wishing he had pitted with 15 laps to go, but again, 7 laps from the end, he is leading the Grand Prix. So that's true. Before those 7 laps, he was in the lead, but that cliff is there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the teams really need to go back in China and look at what can happen to you if you don't get off your tires soon enough and see what happened to poor Kimi, because that was just ridiculous how far he fell.
Yeah.
And how fast.
And the same thing. I mean, it could have been worse for Fernando, but still, when that cliff came and they dropped, I blame Ferrari. I think, you know, even Fernando, he was being very loyal and said the strategy was right. I think Ferrari didn't get it right.
No, it didn't work out for them like it did for Lotus and Williams.
Yeah, I agree. You mean Sauber.
Sauber, yeah. I thought it was Sauber.
Yeah, Williams didn't do that good.
No, they didn't do
it
well.
Sebastian Vettel, let's quickly talk about his trip to Njoisy.
Njoisy.
It was very successful. We got a lot of good pictures of him with the New York City skyline and people hugging and kissing.
And Bernie's probably all happy.
A lot of people are happy, and certainly the organizers are very happy. This is a serious situation. I think this race will go. It's a great location.
Yeah, there's not a whole, you know, it's not like they have to build the track from scratch. So
that's my point. This is a much easier,
you know, this isn't like Austin where basically you were talking about
an empty field. Yeah, no, I think this is great. Sebastian Vettel said of his experience in New Jersey, he said it's a pretty steep uphill and there are some nice corners up there, which makes it really fun to drive. It's truly unique, and this Manhattan skyline is unreal. If he's happy, everybody's happy, yeah. Steven.
And I do like that. It's nice to hear that there's elevation change. I like tracks that go
up and down. I heard it's going to be a great track. Eric Boullier came out talking about Romain Grosjean's superior dominance of the team. And he says, he keeps surprising me because he has the same characteristics as we always knew he had. He is a hard worker, he listens, and he works a lot, and he's kicking some Kimi Räikkönen booty. Yeah.
And I think the difference between his first time in and this time, he's got a car.
Yeah, well, no. And, you know, Romain Grosjean has showed that he's a good driver in the lower formulas.
Yeah.
So I think the situation when he was at Renault and with Nando and Flavio... Yeah, that was a bizarre situation, and of course we knew what happened with Piquet. Yeah. Still, Grosjean was expected to perform, and he is, and he's outperforming Kimi Räikkönen. And I think I'm hoping, you know, and it's, you know, I hate to say that Kimi Räikkönen is under pressure, because I don't think Kimi Räikkönen puts pressure on himself.
No, and I don't think he allows pressure to be put on him.
So. No, he's just, you know, I'll get this done. You know, it'll happen, man. More ice cream, please.
Yeah.
So, that's the problem with Kimi's attitude after a while, because he was pumped up when he first came back to Formula One. But as this goes on, and if he doesn't perform, we're going to see the same Kimi Räikkönen that was really ousted from Ferrari because of that lackadaisical...
Laissez-faire attitude.
Stupid you! Yes. Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah.
Thanks for writing that big check. Oh, what? You want me to win a race? What?
So, don't get me wrong. I mean, he won a world championship with Ferrari, but afterwards it was really downhill in terms of motivation.
Yeah, I think a lot of that was kind of lost the fire.
Right. Europe being in the news because of the economical situation that they're in between Greece, Spain, and Italy.
And the Euro. Just and the kind Euro. Of teetering.
Yeah, Montezemolo, came out and he says that he's calling for all the F1 bosses to take an urgent action to prevent the sport from being damaged from the worldwide financial crisis. He says, quote, "The world economic situation, and that of Europe in particular, is very serious, and the world of Formula One cannot ignore these facts. We cannot lose any more time. We need to tackle urgently and with determination the question of cost." He wants to bring down the costs before Italy and Greece tumble into the sea.
Montezemolo?
Yes. What,
really?
I know, but it sounds good.
Who's...
Well, because, you don't understand.
Who is currently the most...
He has no choice but to say this, because, a lot of the city workers in Maranello and in Rome, they're going to have to take pay cuts.
Ah, that's what he's looking to do. He's going to lower costs by lowering overhead.
Why can't they be helping their schools in Maranello?
I'm sure that Ferrari puts plenty of money into the schools in Maranello.
So, I don't know. I'm sure
I'm sure they're the biggest taxpayer in Maranello.
But there's a lot of politics involved. Yeah. So, you know, he's just trying to be a dude.
Maybe he's ramping up that bid for Parliament again.
That bid for Parliament. But anyway, there you have it. Stay tuned for our interview with Petri Cervanto. So, we're going to take a quick break. And we'll be back after this brief message from Honest Engines.
Honesty is something we all look for, especially when it comes to auto service. Honest Engines Auto Service Tallahassee is where you'll find it. Since 2005, they've been delivering trusted, dependable service to Florida's capital. Honest Engines is your full-service auto repair center. Bumper to bumper, they have you covered. Honest Engines Auto Repair offers a variety of services. Transmission repair, oil change service, and much, much more. Don't let just anyone work on your car. Bring it to Honest Engines. They'll give your baby the care it deserves. They work closely with you to make sure you know what's being done. With Honest Engines, you don't have to guess what their team is doing. Their highly experienced and certified technicians know just what your car needs, and they'll make sure you do too. So if you're in the Tallahassee area and you need auto repairs, give Honest Engines a call. 850-421-8461. And tell them F1Weekly.com sent you. Honest Engines Auto Repair. Right on the corner, right on the price. 718 Gay Street, Tallahassee.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
It's always a bit funny for us when we go through customs. They ask you these dodgy questions. What was the purpose of your visit in Canada? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I was here for the race. And he said, and the guy said, did you have a good seat? I said, yeah. I was driving.
Yeah.
But you were driving? He looked at the passport. Ah, it was...
Two-time world champion. People think I'm Morton Downey Jr.
Greetings and welcome to America, Mr. Sebastian Vettel. Today we will be departing for Montreal for the Canadian Grand Prix, Rockingham for British F3, and Tin Top Thunder from both sides of the pond. First stop is Île Notre Dame, the Canadian Grand Prix. Fantastic race, really loved it. Pole number 32 for Sebastian Vettel and win number 1 finally for Lewis Hamilton this year. And sooner or later, I think sooner, we will have a repeat winner. I say either Lewis or Sebastian as a repeat winner in Valencia. What say you?
It could be Fernando.
It could be Fernando.
It could be. You know, if they get their tire allocations and their strategies correct.
Cool.
Keep it a roll. Let's get an 8th winner. Yeah.
That would be nice. 8th one would be very, very nice.
Could be Romain Grosjean.
Yeah, could be. Could be Schumacher. Could be Kimi. Let's see. The Hamilton victory is coming exactly 5 years to the day from his maiden victory from maiden pole in 2007 at the same location. And this was the race where Sato San passed Alonso. It was a big day for Sato. You remember that?
Yeah, I heard all of Japan roar.
Absolutely. And Lewis is now again back in the championship lead. This has seen also 5 or 6 different drivers, which is interesting. And the absolute record for consecutive races with different winners is 9 during the 1982 season. It all started in Monte Carlo when nobody wanted to win the race on the final lap. And then Ricardo Patrese got the win, driving a Brabham for Mr. Bernie Ecclestone. And this list includes John Watson in the sequence that they came. John Watson winning in Detroit. Nelson Piquet in Canada, which was the first win for BMW turbo engine. Then came Didier Pironi at Sanford, which turned out to be his last Grand Prix win before his career-ending crash at Hockenheim in the rain. Then came Niki Lauda in the British Grand Prix for McLaren. René Arnoux in the famous race at Paul Ricard, where he ignored team orders and said bye-bye to his teammate Alain Prost to win his home race, as he told me on his birthday, which happens to be on July 4th. And another driver who has the same date of birth is Jan Magnussen. These are two of the drivers we have interviewed who were born on July 4th. Interesting. I'm sure there are some others out there. And those who were born on July 5th, they missed out on a free entry to the United States and a free Denny's meal.
And a free mention on the F1 Weekly podcast.
Exactly. The next three events saw first-time winners Patrick Tambay, who replaced Gilles Villeneuve at Ferrari, won in Germany. Elio De Angelis won by a whisker from Keke Rosberg in Austria. This was a great race. And this was the last Lotus victory in the life of ACBC, also known as Colin Chapman. That's what they used to call him on Radio France International. Colin Chapman, Nigel Mansell. And Rosberg himself was the 9th different winner in a row when he took victory in, believe it or not, the Swiss Grand Prix at Dijon-Prenois. And there was some controversy on this race also. You can check out on YouTube. It went on, I think, for 1 extra lap. Conspiracy theories all around. No, it really did.
I believe you. But that was the extra lap to make it officially Swiss.
Yes, Swiss cheese. British F3 from Rockingham. 3 races, 3 different winners, but all from the same team, Carlin Motorsports. Very interesting. Jasmine Jaffer of Malaysia won the opening race of the weekend. Local chap Alex Lynn was second, and Felix Serrales of Puerto Rico was third. And Felix is a pretty cool cat. You know, I met him at Alton Park, and he's doing well. Okay, our Dutch friend Hannes van Asseldonk was fourth. The second race saw first win of the season for another of our old friend, Mr. Harry Tinknell. Final race saw a dominant win for Jack Harvey with Alex Lynn second and Carlos Sainz Jr. third. I was shocked that Carlos Sainz Jr. did not win a race this weekend. In one of the races, he was given a penalty, so he had to start from the back. But I think he will come back to win more races. Now, this is interesting. Italian F3, victory for Eddie Cheever Jr. Jr. Because Eddie Cheever, the guy who won the Indy 500, he was junior, I am told. So, victory for Eddie Cheever Jr. Jr. at Mugello. His Papito raced in F1 for many years and also won the Indy 500 in the Halcyon days of IRL.
Wouldn't that make him Eddie Cheever the Third?
That's what I would call him, Eddie Cheever the Third.
Thank you. Okay. It always helps to have an open mind.
Just like Thurston Howell the Third.
Okay, thank you very much. And he's doing pretty decent, so we wish him well. Indy cars. Pistol packing and first oval win for Justin Wilson as both race leaders Scott Dixon and Graham Rahal crashed while leading. I must say, nothing like an English accent with a Stetson on. That's what I call jolly hee-haw.
That was a strange picture. Him, and Justin Wilson. People forget that he's actually pretty tall.
He is
for a former F1 driver,
right?
And him shooting those pistols in the air with the big cowboy hat, yeah, it just looked bizarre to me.
Yeah, it did.
I'm sure his parents loved it.
Oh, yes. Hold him high. Hang him high and hold him high. Rahal was able to coast to second place finish with Ryan Briscoe third. And Ryan Briscoe used to live and race in Italy. Remember, he was a Toyota development driver. And Mugello happens to be his favorite track. Business as usual for Sato San, going out after hitting the wall. And Rubinho did not even start the race. Tecno Clablamo problem, basically some technical issue.
Yeah, I was wondering what that meant because I saw the DRS right after his name, and there was another person who didn't start, the our favorite Chiquita
Simona.
Correcto.
Okay. From the Why Am I Not Surprised folder, we get the news that the Chinese round of IndyCar racing has been cancelled. I say, you know, at F1 Weekly we give free good advice here. I say they go to a race in Argentina or a street race in Acapulco. Or try a street race in Birmingham, England, and get the most famous Brummy, R. Nige, as the Grand Marshal.
Or even that better, go to Mexico City.
Mexico City, the old track they race there also.
Yeah.
And now they're talking that the Formula One will come back to that track, which is hard to believe. Because they've now made some development there, it will be very hard.
We've talked about this before.
We have?
If Bernie...
Nomas?
If Bernie wants it, Bernie gets it.
Oh, he's like Lola. That's very true. But I would like to see a Grand Prix in Mexico because they have a lot of passion for motor racing. Now we go to British Tin Tops, also known as BTCC, from Snetterton. Race 1 saw a Honda 1-2 with Matt Neal winning and Andrew Jordan second. Second race saw another 1-2 for Honda. Andrew Jordan was again second, but this time the winner was Gordon Shedden. Jason Plato was third in his MG. Now, MG, you're a car guy, you would know this. MG used to stand for Morris Garage, or Garage, as they call it in the UK. Now it is more like Manchurian Garage. You know, it's owned by a Chinese company.
Everything's owned by a Chinese company now.
No, Jaguar is owned by...
F1 Weekly is bought by the Chinese conglomerate.
Oh, really? So when am I going to get my fortune cookie, which will say, you soon have no job...
It's on its way, my friend.
Yeah, it will be. At Motorsports Mondial, it will be outsourced to Nanking. That's okay. Times, they are changing. Matt Neal took his second win of the weekend in race 3 in his Honda. Plato was second in his MG. If anybody is interested, and I'm sure most of our listeners would be, there is nice footage of BTCC from days gone by on YouTube. Days when Camaros and Mustangs also race against Minis and Lotus Cortinas. And you can even see Jim Clark in some of these races. Very, very impressive. You know, I was talking of Jim Clark. I was watching one day on YouTube, just, you know, trying to get the different stuff. And there's a video available of a race, has to be, you know, like before 68 or before 68, with Jim Clark racing at Imola. And I think it's like a Formula 2 race or a Formula 3. But very impressive to see. In those days, you know, track was a little bit different, layout. But I would highly recommend Imola, San Marino, Jim Clark. Okay, from British Tin Tops to American Tin Tops, also known as
Le NASCAR.
Yeah, they were at Pocono International Raceway, and this was a great track for IndyCar racing. Joey Logano, I should say, who has been on the Dale Jr. program, meaning winless since 2009, won from pole position in his Toyota. Your favorite, Mark Martin, was second and Tony Stewart third. Marcus Ambrose was 13th and Monty was a solid 17th.
That's fantastic. Poconos. Everybody goes on vacation in the Poconos, Nasser.
That is very true. It's a beautiful part of America. I've been to...
I know you're a Pocono kind of a guy.
Yes, it's very nice, beautiful. And that's where Joe Montana came from. I mean, not Pocono, but Pennsylvania.
Exactly. So, yeah, keep up the good work, Nass. Thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. Quickly, before we talk about the interview, the tickets went on sale for Texas.
Texas? There you go.
There were no cautions. And I want to hear about the listeners who bought tickets. Email us. Because if you're out there,
you
maybe
give
we
them
can
a
put
hug.
Together an F1 Weekly secret rendezvous.
No, it has to be a public, not secret, like with hot dogs.
With hot dogs?
Yeah.
We're in Texas, Nasser. We're talking in-flight burrito.
I mean, you can do that. Well, what you do, you get hot dog with some jalapenos, so it's Tex-Mex.
Tex-Mex, that's true, and maybe some chorizo.
There you go.
Yeah. Then so that's going to be exciting, and of course, I'm working on, you know... Somebody, you know, Yay put a poll on the forum to see who wanted F1 Weekly t-shirts to come back, because we mentioned that in podcast number 581.
Have you seen the new thing he has put on, F1 Weekly shorts?
I'm sorry?
I'm serious. Apparently,
F1 Weekly shorts?
Apparently, yeah, well, apparently you haven't
let me just get to the
seen
t-shirts.
That one.
Now, we started with t-shirts. We've moved on now to polo shirts and, of course, the good doctor put in his two cents, and he wants a button-up dress shirt with the F1 Weekly crest embroidered on the pocket.
Okay. Has he come up with an F1 Weekly crest?
You know, people forget that this is a zero organization.
Yeah. That's so, waiting for somebody to come up with a parka. You know, it's like...
Yeah. So I don't know if anything is going to happen, but if we can get a little F1 Weekly meeting in... Austin, I'll try to get some t-shirts out there.
Well, if you see the idea that Ye has posted,
shorts.
I think, yeah, boxer shorts, whatever they are, I think you can sell a million of those just in the Tenderloin district.
Are you talking about F1 Weekly skivvies?
It's out there on the forum.
Okay, so I'll go take a look because I am a busy man. Oh, yeah. I haven't had a chance to look at the forum today.
Okay.
Shocking. But anyway, let's go to this outstanding interview, Nasser. Please introduce this person.
Yes, sir. Petri Suvanto is a young man from Seinäjoki in Finlandia. He is on the Heikki Kovalainen program, very quick and always smiling. After a successful karting career, he moved into single-seater racing in the 2010 Formula BMW Europe Series with Josef Kaufmann Racing, our friend from Germany. After the season, he hopped on a big old jetliner to America. Then he hitchhiked across FLA to St. Petersburg, where he teamed up with Cape Motorsports. And together, racing is a team sport, as you know, they won the 2011 U.S. Formula 2000 Championship in grand style. And with it, he got a free, fully sponsored ride. So this frees, and that's thanks to Mazda. This season, he's racing in Star Mazda with Pelfrey team, and we wish him all the best. And I also want to thank him very much for his time. His goal is to become the first Finnish driver to drink milk at the Brickyard after 500 miles, which, of course, would be followed by a bottle of Finlandia.
Of course. Does he know Kimi Räikkönen?
Yeah, I'm sure he does. Among the things which have impressed Petri on this side of the pond, the vastness of America, the friendly peeps, and the joy and pride of Florida cuisine, the redneck burger. Please enjoy this conversation with Mr. Suvanto, and arigato for listening. How are things for you in beautiful Florida?
Doing good. Just got to my team's workshop. The team is working hard to get a winning car again and getting prepared for the next race in Iowa, even on a Sunday.
You are working hard for the money.
If you say so.
Yeah. So what's going on in your world, Patrick, these days?
Well, this year I've been racing the Star Master, and because of that I've been living here in St. Petersburg, Florida with my team, and that's pretty much what's going on.
Good. Okay, now what we would like to do is do a recap of where the association between Mr. Suvanto and F1 Weekly started. You had a pretty successful career in karting. Things looked very good for you in karting, and then you moved into motor racing in 2010. And do you remember when you had your first race in Barcelona, your first ever interview was with F1 Weekly?
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true, Nasir. We remember sitting there outside the hotel on a cold evening and doing a nice little interview chat with you.
Yes,
really enjoyed that thoroughly.
Well, same here. I'm so happy to see you do so well on this side of the pond. Okay, now that race in Barcelona was in Formula BMW. Give us a little brief review of how the season went for you. What were the main challenges for you from karting to car racing?
Obviously, Formula BMW, the thing with that was that we raced on the Formula One weekend as a support series. So we ended up getting quite little track time, and I found that very challenging. And we only had 20-minute practice before the qualifying session. And while I was trying to still learn all the little tricks and getting more comfortable in the car, there were other drivers who were already comfortable. So I had a lot to catch up, and I think I wasn't able to do the job I was expecting from myself. And the season was all in all a bit of a disappointment.
And on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you rate your season, 10 being best?
Is this 2010, yeah?
Yes.
I'd say only a 5. That's not really quite average.
No, I understand. Okay, now Formula One support race, like you said, you went to all the great tracks, Monza, Spa, Silverstone. What was the best track from a driver's point of view from racing and driving and competing?
I really enjoyed Silverstone. Silverstone was a fast, sweeping track. It's really much a driver's track, and I had so much fun there. I would. That's one of the things I miss about racing in Europe, the couple of great tracks like Silverstone and Spa, which obviously we have good tracks here in the United States as well, but it's some of those great tracks are still in Europe, unfortunately.
No, I agree with you. Spa you mentioned, how was the experience of driving a Formula BMW car through Eau Rouge?
It was spiritual. I'd say spiritual. The first time I went through there, I was like, wow, some true champions have gone through this place, and I'm here myself. So it was a really special moment, even though only in a Formula BMW car.
Yeah, very true. Okay, now your team manager was our good friend, Mr. Lars Kaufmann. And he tells me every time I see him that the best chicas are in Budapest and Barcelona. Do you agree with that, or do you think the best chicas are in FLA, USA?
Lars has a pretty good eye for the chicas, so I would agree with him.
Okay, yeah, he's always smiling and happy, so he must know something.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Okay, good for him. Okay, now, Petri, you and I were chatting, I think it was at the end of 2010, and you mentioned that you were looking into racing in U.S. Formula 2000, obviously here in America, and you were planning to make a run to Florida to, test for the team. The question I have, winter time in Florida and winter time in Finlandia, describe the two different worlds.
Yes, it is two different worlds. It was very surprising to come here. Obviously, I knew what to expect, but still a very different environment to what I'm used to. And yeah, I'm still getting used to it. It's very humid here, and it's definitely a challenge coming from the cold winter in the army back in the winter of 2012 this year.
Yes, and talking of Army, you did your service. So are you ready if the Finnish Navy ever spots a Lars Kofman U-boat in the Finnish waters, are you ready to go and dive bomb the thing?
Oh, yeah, I have to. It's part of my responsibility as a Finnish citizen. So it is a necessity, and I'm definitely ready to do that if that ever comes up. Hopefully not, but if it does, then there we go again.
Yes, and I just want to give you a pre-warning that if your captain of your boat is Captain Raikkonen, don't expect verbal orders. Just look out for the submarine yourself.
That would actually be highly possible. You never know. He went through the same unit as I did, so you never know.
Yeah. Is Olaf Finlandia excited that he's back and, of course, looking very feisty?
Oh, yeah. It's good to have Kimi back in F1, and definitely makes F1 more interesting for a Finn like me.
Yes, and even for racing fans like us who are not lucky enough to be Finnish, did you see him on Top Gear?
Oh, yeah, I've seen the episode. Actually, you sent me the link to it, then I had a chance to watch it a couple of weeks ago, and it was pretty hilarious. Kimi definitely has his own way of humor, which is funny, very funny.
The guy is classic. Jeremy asked him, who builds this car? He goes, I don't know. It says Renault. it's really good to see him back.
Indeed.
Okay, now, apart from the weather, when you first came to the U.S., obviously this is a very big place. What was the thing that impressed you or kind of shocked you? You see Americana in movies and all that, like I used to do when I was not living here. But when you come and experience, it's a different, experience in itself. So what surprised you most once you got to the United States?
That's a good question, Nasir. And what would I say? I would say just the pure size of it and how many big cities you have here. It's amazing. It's just every city has its big story, and we don't always have that in Europe. We only have a couple of big cities, and that's what surprises me a lot. Still, when going into big cities here in the United States for different races.
Well, I've been here over a quarter of a century, and it still amazes me when I travel how big this place is. Now, one of the great things you discovered, and you told me proudly on your while we were chatting, is you had the experience of trying out the redneck burger. What's in that?
Well, living in Florida, that's part of the life.
Oh, yes. And have you developed a taste for NASCAR?
Step by step. I started watching some races last year, and it definitely has its own world, and not sure if I would be ready to race there one day. We will see, but definitely enjoy watching it.
Great. Did you see the Montoya rocket fuel fire, I should say?
I did see that live on TV, and it was pretty amazing. The Colombian is on fire again, but on a very different meaning.
Yeah, sure. And when I saw that, and I said to myself, only one person could be involved in this crash, and he did. So, okay, going back to 2010 season, you win the championship in your rookie season. Did that surprise you?
Well, coming into 2011, I had the good experience from Europe from Formula BMW, and I knew that if I could put all those experiences together, I would have the speed to come here to the United States or whatever series in Europe or Asia and be competitive. So it was definitely I expected to do well, but it went really well and maybe even better than I expected. And last year was really the best season of racing I've ever had, and it really made a big difference for me, for my confidence and for my whole life as well.
Now, in terms of competition in America compared to Europe and the style of competition, do you see big differences?
I think the main difference might be more like the size of the talent pool. I think like the top drivers here, it's really, really, there are really good guys here, really good drivers, top talents who could go to Europe and do well. But at the moment, it's just, it's not quite back. Like in Europe, you might have, Nasir, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, sorry, I had some problems with computer. So if you have 10 very very fast drivers in European Formula category, you might have here like 5-6 guys who can win. So it's slightly different, but every year it seems like the competition in the United States is getting more and more competitive, and I definitely don't underestimate and be let's say cocky towards racing level in the United States. That's definitely not the case. I really think it's challenging here.
No, you know what you're saying is it's pretty much the same answer whether the driver is American or European or South American. That's the pretty much general consensus that instead of fighting 5 people to get on the podium, you're fighting 10. You also got the opportunity in America to race on ovals. Were you kind of concerned at going in circles, the walls right there, no runoff area? How was your adjustment to oval racing?
My adjustment was very smooth indeed, and I don't know what the reason is. It's very personal experience. Some drivers take a couple of days, some drivers take a couple of years to get used to it. But for me, it felt really natural from the get-go, and only took me one session to get accustomed to it, and I very much enjoy oval racing, and I think it provides a nice variety to normal road course racing, and mixing together the three different tracks, race tracks, the regular street courses, and then the city races, street races, and the ovals is, I think, very ideal kind of mix.
Great. Now, I believe there was a weekend where you won both races. Give us a little the highs and lows of the season for you from last season, please.
High was definitely when we went to Mid Ohio, and it was just a perfect weekend. Just the car was perfect all weekend. I did my job, and we pretty much swept the whole weekend. We were quickest in every practice. We're quickest in qualifying by, I don't remember, maybe 9 tenths, and won both races by quite a margin. So that was really, really a great race. And I actually am a bit disappointed not to be going back to Mid-Ohio this year, since it's so far my favorite track here in the United States.
Have you had a chance to go or race at Road America?
Yes, indeed. Last year we had a race there, and that was actually one of the lows of the season, and we were struggling the whole weekend. But that was the key for our championship, like the key ingredient for our successful championship last year was that we were able to still manage to do well on the weekends when we struggled. So even though we really had a tough weekend at Road America last year, we ended up being first and second in the races, so it was really, really a key to the whole championship, I'd say.
You know, the track there is my favorite track in the U.S., and I think that track is as good as most Formula One tracks. What's your assessment of Road America?
It is a great track, and I would love to see IndyCar go back there one day, and hopefully one day I will race there in the car myself.
And in terms of the location of the track, Elkhart Lake, beautiful area.
Yes, it kind of reminds me of Finland. Felt very like home there, I'd say. I stayed there for a couple of weeks with a local family between the races, and had a very good time there.
Yeah, great. Now, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, a great avenue, a great venue, great race. You were there, and what was your experience last year when you went to the place and looked at the facility and the sea of people? it has to be very, very impressive.
Yeah, that really, really struck me. And during the last couple of years, I've really, really understood the spirit of Indy 500 and how big deal it is. And it always, still this year, I guess every year you go there, it gives you goosebumps when you stand there listening to the national anthem before the race. And that's really a big deal. And I really, that's one of my biggest goals and dreams to win that race one day.
Oh, yeah. Now, you raced at the Lucas Raceway there?
Right, that's the smaller oval for the where yes. Actually the NASCAR trucks used to race for yes. Decades.
How was that experience racing before the big event?
It is probably one of the most special race weekends of the whole season, since we are so involved in the Indy 500 activities, and it was a good experience. Like last year, we had a great weekend there. We won the race in USF 2000, and unfortunately this year we were struggling a bit due to some electronical problems in the practice. So we were having a lot of we had to do a lot to catch up in car development to do well, and we only ended up finishing fifth this year. So we have to step up our game.
Okay, in terms of drivers who you fought for the championship, who impressed you?
Are you talking about last year or this year?
Last year.
Oh, last year. Well, it was really interesting group of drivers from different backgrounds, and there were four or five guys who could win race any day. So I wouldn't really put up anyone especially, but it was definitely a good bunch of drivers, and we respected each other, gave each other room on the racetrack, and we had a good year. We had a good year of fighting on the track.
Okay, last question on the 2010 season is, you were with Cape Motorsports out of Florida. Did you test with other teams also before you deciding on them?
No, I ended up contacting many of the teams and before I did the test, and I was very impressed with Cape Motorsports on how they handled the whole situation, and that was the first thing I tested with. First team I tested with, and ended up really liking it there, and ended up just committing myself to them, and it ended up going pretty well.
Good. Okay, now 2011, you win the championship in 2010, courtesy of Mazda. You get a free ride in Star Mazda, which is a very good program they have going. Again, how many teams did you test with before deciding on your current team?
Well, again, it was a very similar situation. I was in talks with Team Palfrey already in the middle of 2011 season, while I hadn't even been in talks with any other team. So again, it went very smoothly, and already in the last race of the 2011 season, I was committed to this team, and that was a big advantage, as I had a chance to get to know the team over the winter and get a good test plan under my belt, and it was very smooth transition from Cape Motorsports to Team Palfrey, since they also are based in the same city here in St. Petersburg.
Cool. And are you also based in St. Petersburg, if I may ask?
Yes, I live here in St. Pete, and that's where I plan to live this year, and I don't know about next year, but yeah, definitely staying here for this season.
Good. Now, describe the difference between a Star Mazda car and the U.S. Formula 2000 car, please.
Well, the big difference is that USF 2000 car has a tube chassis, and Star Mazda has carbon monocoque. So that sounds like a big difference. And the biggest difference in driving is the feel of the car. It just feels totally different, and it took a while to get comfortable with all that extra weight, and feels more like a real race car.
Great. Now I'm looking at the Star Mazda Championship. Right now you are seventh in the championship. Coming from a championship winning season and right now you're seventh, are you feeling any frustration or everything is under control? You know what to do to move ahead in the standings?
No, I'm not frustrated. I think we've been just snatching our chances. It's been always close to having a good weekend, and then it's just been small things which has made the races not as good. So I feel that if we just nail all the details together and make a perfect weekend, we can be up there and win races. We just need to keep on working and be confident, and I'm sure we'll climb up the standings. And one thing what is good is that the standings is very close still. I definitely don't see myself out of the contention for the championship, and it's still very early in the season, so feeling confident, definitely.
That's good, and I'm looking forward to your first win very soon. Sooner the better, of course. Now, you have been to California, and you have a race coming up here in September, so I'm going to see you there in up close and personal, and we shall have a very nice California burrito.
That is booked already. That's booked.
Yeah. Have you been to California? I believe you made a trip for some testing or something like that.
Yeah, we did, during our preseason testing program, we tested on a couple of tracks in Northern California, and it was a good experience. And I also had a chance to stay in LA area for a couple of days, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's really special place on the earth.
Oh yeah. Now, did you test at Laguna Seca or Sears Point?
Actually, neither one of those. It's a couple of smaller test tracks for which are good for street course racing.
Now, do they have a name, or are these secret CIA tracks which cannot be named?
Let's keep them secret for now. You know, you never know. Maybe I go back there next year, and I don't want to give that information to any of my competitors.
Oh, these were like private tests, something like that?
Yeah, it was. No, okay. Most of the preseason tests are normally private, so it's the one team, my team, rents the whole track for the whole day, and we spend the whole day testing, or a couple of days testing on the same track just within our own team.
No, if you want to keep the location confidential, I respect that. No worries. Okay.
Thanks.
Have you been to San Francisco?
No, yeah, that's one of my goals. I really want to experience that part of California too.
Good.
You live quite close to San Francisco, right?
I am 45 minutes south of San Francisco Airport, so basically 1 hour from San Francisco.
Yeah, so maybe you have to give me your San Francisco tour someday.
Yeah, you're very welcome, and I'll be happy to take you to Laguna Seca, which is a fantastic track. It's located in the Monterey Peninsula, very nice part of America. And then Sears Point, you know, interestingly, Laguna Seca is 90 minutes south of me, and Sears Point is 90 minutes north of me, and Sears Point is in Napa wine country. And coming from Kimi's country, I'm sure you would enjoy a tour of the wine country also.
Oh, yeah. I know what you mean now. Maybe, possibly.
Great. Petri, I'm sure your focus is on the 2012 season here. Question I have, looking forward, what is the game plan for next year, and where would you like to see yourself in, let's say, 5 years?
Like you said, my concentration is totally in this season and the next race. Every race is one race per time. But next year, the options are basically either Star Mazda or Indy Lights. And it depends a lot how this year goes and how the finances come together. But it's one of those two, depending on 100% how this season goes. And in 5 years, then I would see myself competing for the first win in IndyCar. That's my goal.
Oh, that would be fantastic. And do you have any desire or plans to maybe try European racing, Formula 3 or whatever, GP2, in the near future?
Well, my long-term plan is to remain in the United States at the moment. That's what I see as the optimal path for me right now. But beyond IndyCar, and after I've reached my goals in IndyCar, you never know, I'd be happy to go back to Europe, but what the situation is now and what my feelings are and my goals are, it's definitely 100% in the United States, but you never want to close anything down, so it's just 1 year at a time.
No, I understand. Okay, we are about 2 hours away from the start of the Canadian Grand Prix. Who would you like to see win?
Maybe Heikki Kovalainen that makes a miracle with Caterham and wins the race. That would be really a miracle. But I'd like to see either Kimi win or one the two of the McLarens. So we will see. We'll be an exciting race. We have to catch the race in a couple of hours.
Yeah, we already had a miracle in Barcelona. What was your impression of that victory by Pastor Maldonado?
Yeah, that's one of those races that only happened once in I don't know, a decade or something, that someone out of nowhere comes and wins in a car that isn't supposed to win. So it was really, really a nice race, and it's nice to see Formula One having those young guys, young talents, come up there and take the wins.
Great. Okay, Petri, your time is greatly appreciated. Finally, how about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly? And as I told you when we first met, we have listeners in Finlandia also.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah, so do you want to say something to the listeners? At least tell them about your website, por favor.
Oh, should I talk in Finnish or English?
let's do it in both. That would be cool.
Oh, wow. So this is like a Formula One press conference where you first speak in English and then you speak in Finnish.
See, we are taking you where you were not even thinking.
Ah, that's good. You're training me. You're training me for the future.
There you go.
Well, my website is www.suvanto.info. Oh, actually, sorry about that. It changed it. It's www.petrusvanto.info. So that's what it is. And you should go there and check it out. And you should give me a follow on Twitter. That's where I'm very active and really looking forward to talking with all of you fans out there and who follow me. And yeah, that's it. Thanks a lot.
And now a message in your own language, please.
Kiitos. That's it. That was Kimi way.
Oh, okay. Then okay.
It was very simple and direct. Okay. Economical way of using words.
Oh yes, the Kimi and Mika way.
Oh yeah, indeed.
Okay, thank you very much, Petri.
Thank you, Nasir. It was my pleasure.
Petri, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Let's go right into the wrap up, and of course that means 50 words on the Canadian Grand Prix. Stephen, take it away.
First, we got a Ratham. Congrats, Lewis and McLaren, on the most perfect race. 7 for 7, an unusual podium and an exciting race.
From Parrothead, Shumi has the worst luck.
Ye writes, had me on the edge of my seat from lights to flag. Shame it was the straights and the tires that did that, and not seeing the three best drivers in the world racing as it was for the first 15 laps.
BMW 85 says, much like their poutine, the racing in Montreal never fails to satisfy. Loved seeing the strategy unfold to create an exciting finish. Great to see two promising youngsters on the podium.
Frank Nicholson writes, great to see the top drivers and teams fighting at the front again, even if it didn't last the whole race.
Iceman, the 2012 lottery continues with 7 different winners from 7 thrilling races that lived up to the promise of more Montreal madness. Can it possibly be 8 from 8 come Valencia?
Anonymous writes, now we can debate who will be the first two-time winner this season.
Menardi Montreal says, was there this weekend a bit boring at the beginning, but the ending was great. Lewis was fantastic and the people loved him. Montreal 2012 was not the greatest. The images we saw on TV was not the Montreal I know. I was on Crescent Street Thursday evening and was disgusted. The student crap is now a political, union-driven agenda encompassing anti-tuition fees, anti-capitalization, anti-pollution, anti-sports cars, anti-sexist, anti-prostitution, and all other non-politically correct BS. It's sad that the student leaders and our provincial PM cannot come to an agreement.
Sounds like a lot of people jumped on that bandwagon. So Hassan writes, and we thought 6 from 6 was something worth talking about. McLaren strategists get it right while Red Bull and Ferrari call it wrong. Meanwhile, what's with Webber and Button from race winner to almost nowhere for no obvious reason? Now we're talking taking bets on 8 from 8.
Outstanding. Love the forum. Everybody's active. I want to thank everybody who participates in the 50 words. Let's go ahead and thank everyone who goes to Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. Just do a search for me and add us as a friend. If you'd like to advertise across from with our website or podcast, just email me at info@f1weekly.com. I want to thank everybody for listening. Good night.
Good night.
Bye now.